What is up, people? You are listening to New Generation Hero Talk. I am your host, EJ Stewart. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll be talking about Bob Iger, speaking a lot about the future of Marvel, where Marvel can change the course of direction, where they're going in terms of the quality of their movies and combating that so-called superhero fatigue. So we'll just explain to that. He also talked about Deadpool and Wolverine. He made some interesting comments about that movie as well. So we'll discuss all things Bob Iger this week. And we'll also be talking about Thomas Hayden Church, a name you haven't heard in a long time, probably. He has some interesting comments about what Sony's plans could be for Spider-Man in the future. And we're not talking about Tom Holland, perhaps Tobey Maguire. So we'll talk about that. And then we'll also discuss DC and what their, I guess, output will be at San Diego Comic-Con, if they will have one. A key player for DC will not be at Comic-Con. So the question becomes, what will we see from DC at this year's San Diego Comic-Con? Be a good discussion. Joining me are my co-hosts, starting with Shamari Stewart. Sham, good to have you back on the show. And speaking about DC, did you see James Gunn was asked on social media about the possibility of working with Grant Gustin, and he had some pretty glowing things to say about Grant. He said, look, Grant's a great actor. He's on Broadway right now doing a great job, and he certainly doesn't need to be part of a DC project, but if he was interested, like, he would be open to working with him, which we know James Gunn is very quick to quell rumors that have no merit. And there was the comments from Grant Gustin saying that he would love to come back and work as the Flash for James Gunn. So I was surprised James Gunn was open to even saying that he was open to working with Gustin. He didn't say specifically on The Flash or anything. He just said he'd be open to working with him with DC. Thoughts on Gunn being open to work with Grant?
Well, I mean, I think it is... I have such mixed feelings about the Grant Gustin Flash because it's probably very connected to just the kind of downward, I don't know if I call it a spiral, but just a downward trend towards the end of the Flash series. And just me just kind of being kind of just tired of that Flash. But you forget how good he was, like, in the early on, and just how good the show was early on, to the point where I feel like weekly we were kind of asking for, you know, he should just be our Flash, you know?
Right.
So yeah, definitely have mixed feelings about that. I'm not surprised that, you know, that I guess maybe they get along, or maybe, you know, Gunn feels like he can work with Grant Gustin from the little I've seen of him and, you know, interviews and things that he said, seems like a nice guy, pleasant guy. Same thing goes for James Gunn. So,
yeah,
you know, probably not, I guess it's not the most surprising thing. Yeah, I mean, I'm not too surprised. It's pretty unprecedented, I'd say. But again, for me, I treat it as a pleasant thing of, like, Gunn isn't so, I don't know. I don't know what the word is for it, but he's not, like, so, like, I don't know, like, all about, like, oh, my universe needs to have my people in it. And if you were in some other universe or superhero show, then I don't want you in it. Like, he's like, no, I don't care. Like, if you fit, if I feel like there may be a place here for you, I'm going to bring you in. So, you know, I think it reflects positively on James Gunn in that regard. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's not overall, it's not too surprising. I have mixed feelings about Grant Gustin being the Flash again. I'd have to kind of analyze that internally. I don't know if I want to see him as a Flash in this universe, but it's definitely interesting news.
Wow, so Sham, interesting that you're kind of, so a lot of people are really hopeful that he's the Flash, and I kind of agree with you. Which was a little surprising to me, not necessarily because of him, like, Grant is awesome, and I think even when the Flash got goofy, his acting never wavered. He was still really good. He's a great Barry Allen. He's just he I think Grant, I think, understands Barry Allen character better than Zack Snyder, Ezra Miller, or Walter Hamada, or even, dare I say, Andy Muschietti ever did, because we've seen what those men have put together in their presentations of Barry Allen, and it's basically a more awkward Wally West. It's not Barry Allen. So it has nothing to do with Grant. I think what's surprising to me, I think people checked out of the Flash pretty, I don't want to say early, but I think like they don't, nobody remembers the end. Nobody remembers Patrick Ewing, you know, playing on the Orlando Magic. Nobody remembers, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon playing for the Toronto Raptors. You know, they don't remember those guys winning championships, you know, playing for their team. Nobody remembers Charles Barkley limping around for the Rockets in his career. Like, they remember him on the Suns and the Sixers. So I think people.
Nobody remembers Dame Lillard on the Bucks.
Well, look, he did have 40 last a couple nights ago. So I know they had a rough night against the Warriors. He did have a great game against the Clippers.
Yeah, I'm a Celtics fan.
But at the same time, like, you know, like, I think people do remember how great Grant was early on, how he was so captivating as Barry Allen that they're willing to give him a shot. So I'm fascinated by this. I'm curious. I will be shocked. I think there's no chance he's the Flash for James Gunn. I know Shamari said that it shows great that Gunn is open to working with people who may have been on the universe. I think this is lip service. I think he may put Grant Gustin in something else, or maybe somehow Grant Gustin makes a cameo somewhere. But I don't think there's any way he's going to be Gunn's Flash. I think Gunn has shown that he really wants his imprint on this universe. And we saw that with, you know, the fact that they're moving on from Gal Gadot, it sounds like. They moved on from everybody else. It sounds like Aquaman, Jason Momoa, we're not going to see any of him in that role anymore. So I'll be shocked if Grant Gustin somehow makes it his way to the DCU as the Flash, as the main Flash at the very least. But Kendall, as you heard him, he joins us as well on the show today. Kendall, another interesting thing I saw this week was Chris Evans saying, of all the Marvel movies he had to work on, he worked on quite a bit. His favorite one? Winter Soldier. Thoughts on that?
It's interesting. Happy to be on the show. You know, I think for me, Winter Soldier, well, one, obviously not to be all nostalgic like we are every week about Marvel at this point, but like that takes you back to a time when Marvel Studios almost at its peak in terms of like quality of movie. Between that time and around Civil War, I'd say the peak in terms of just consistency, particularly with the Captain America brand. And I mean, that movie for a lot of people is one of the perfect Marvel movies because it's not as consumed with all the Avengers and all the different characters, but like, it's just a really, really good individual story with a character that, while Iron Man is sort of the face of the MCU, because his individual movies were either really bad or, you know, I mean, the first one's obviously great, but like it's 2 and 3 were either bad or co-opted by other side quests and side plots that they kind of fell apart. The Captain America movies, particularly this one, feels sort of like the perfect Marvel movie in that sense with the character who's had no bad movies by himself. Yeah. So it's like, so they have a special place.
Yeah, he's undefeated, never lost, like LeVar Ball.
Exactly. He's Floyd Mayweather. I don't care if some of those losses were or some of those wins were against, you know, guys who just said
Logan Paul,
Conor McGregor, you know, Logan Paul still counts a win to win. So, he's got a. You know, I think that this movie again harkens back to that time. So again, not that you don't want to take too much from it. But that is interesting. Now I will say real quick on the Flash thing.
Yeah.
My guess is I think there's a decent chance Kieran Gustin's cast is somebody else. Mm. And not the Flash. Like you said, I don't think James Gunn would want that baggage because the show is not perfect. If the show was perfect, I think he'd be willing to kind of like Daredevil in that sense. But I don't think we know like. There's no way you want to inherit 9 seasons of Flash baggage. It just doesn't make any sense. And you do, regardless of if you, if you say it's not canon.
I feel like you could sell people on it. I feel like you could definitely sell people on it.
Right.
It would just take a revamp. He would definitely need a new costume. Definitely right, need a new costume. And like, upgraded, like, movie quality effects, which he never had on the TV show. So that, I think with that's those fair. Two things, I definitely think, I mean, I think you could sell people on it. I don't think it's something that's like, right. you know, way out of, you know, out of the realm of possibility at all. The Flash wasn't that toxic not, to where it was like, I don't want to see. And Grant Gustin himself also wasn't that toxic towards the end, where it's just
right.
Like,
I mean, there was still a massive it. Campaign in and a lot of disappointment that he didn't show up in Flashpoint.
Yes. Yes.
You know, true. And so and that was obviously at a time when Flash was already over the show. And we had already seen the worst of the worst, which was pretty much the very end of it, allegedly, because I didn't see it. But,
when you say Flash movie, you mean the DC Flash movie?
Yes, of course. Yes, yeah, right. yeah. I call it Flash.
Which was originally Flashpoint, but yeah,
yeah, just not confused with the show. But yeah, no, I mean, it's gonna be interesting. I mean, I think that's a character. We always talk about when you're casting some of these characters, like that's not somebody that has to be played by one person or can't be played by a lot of people. Like, you know, I just finished catching up in The Boys, and Jack Quaid, you know, who we talked about as a guy who could, you know, who's in the running for Johnny Storm, allegedly, he'd be a great Barry Allen, you know, and like there's plenty mm-hmm. of actors that like aren't yeah. like, you know, that aren't haven't played a superhero or, you know, haven't been talked about. They're probably bigger actors than Grant Gustin, you know, in general, that could definitely play that character. So, yeah, I would guess that we're going to get somebody else.
Yeah, I think we will too. And I agree. I don't think that we'll get.
Is it definitely Barry Allen?
I'll be honest. I don't think we get. What do you mean? Is it definitely? Oh, the next Flash.
That's getting Wally West.
Well, that's a great question. It's a great question. I've never even.
That is. I'm a little tired of. The Barry Allen. I know we haven't really gotten like a great Wally West Kid Flash. Mm. The other, you know, Keaton Longdale was good.
I kind of wish Gunn would have announced that instead of the whole Damian Wayne stuff. I'd be cool. I'd be excited for a Wally West Flash.
Right,
that'd be pretty cool.
Because there's a segment of you know like somewhat of our generation, you know, pre the CW Flash show.
Yeah,
Wally West was the guy from Justice League.
Yeah, millennial generation, Wally West is the Flash.
Yeah, yeah. And then you even had Young Justice.
And in the comics, before Justice League, the cartoon came out, Wally West was the Flash. Barry Allen had been dead for years. Like, I think because Barry Allen's been back for now a little while, he's probably been back for about 15 years, probably. Mm-hmm. We kind of forget how long DC kept him out of the canon as the Flash. Like, Crisis Infinite Earths happens on, like, in, like, what, 85, I want to say? Like, they never brought him back. Like, it wasn't like, oh, he came back, like, very immediately, or, like, he came back in a couple years. Like, Flash was dead, and then he just didn't come back for 20 years. Like, which sounds incredible in hindsight now. That's, like, crazy today. Like, we see, you know, people get killed in comics all the time, and they're back in 2 years, a year, sometimes months. But Barry Allen was just not around, and there were a lot of people that had been upset about it. But DC actually committed to that death for a while, so yeah, I think that's a fair point that I've never thought about. But James Gunn, we know he's doing Damian Wayne, so he's skipping multiple Robins to get to Damian Wayne. And if he is, it's kind of advancing. You know, we're not dealing with any origins, at least it doesn't sound like it. So if he really is advancing his canon to a certain fixed point that ends up creating a lore that already exists, but prior to when we start seeing these movies, then maybe there is a situation where Wally West is already the Flash. And it's interesting because on the one hand, I could say, well, that would be very different and kind of unique and interesting. But on the flip side, again, I mean, Ezra Miller was basically doing a Wally West impersonation. Like, that's, like, do I need to see?
Yes.
And it wasn't exactly Wally West. It was, you know, he was a lot cornier than Wally West is. But, like there was clearly a lot of inspiration of Wally West in that Barry Allen portrayal. There's no doubt. So, like, do I need to see now a better Wally West who's actually Wally West? I mean, it'd be better. I don't like James. I don't like his Barry or their Barry. So, Ezra's Barry. So, like, maybe. But yeah, that's a very interesting question. Kendall Push poses a good point about whether Wally West could end up being in the mix for James Gunn's Flash. Very interesting stuff. We'll get to some stuff with the DC moving forward. I mentioned there's a big omission for their Comic-Con presence, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. I want to talk about, start to show off, though, Bob Iger. So he has some big things to say about the future of Marvel. He was at the Morgan Stanley Technology, Media, and Telecom Conference in San Francisco earlier this week, and he rejected the notion of, quote-unquote, Marvel fatigue, saying all can be fixed by simply making better movies. He said, quote, a lot of people think it's fatigue. It's not audience fatigue. They want great films, and if you build it great, they will come. And there are countless examples of that, some of ours and some of others. Oppenheimer is a perfect example of that, just a fantastic film. He adds, quote, focus is really important. We reduce the output of Marvel, both numbers of films they make and the number of TV shows. That really becomes critical, but I feel good about the team. I feel good about the IP we're making. And then he also talked a little bit about the upcoming Deadpool movie. It's coming out later this year. He said, quote, it will be one of the most successful Marvel movies we've had in a long time. So some big words coming from Bob Iger. I want to go on that last point before we talk about the Marvel fatigue stuff, Sham. Is he putting too much pressure on Deadpool and Wolverine by kind of putting it out there that this is going to be one of the most successful movies Marvel's had in a long time? One, it acknowledges that Marvel has not had many big successful movies of late. And two, this is a movie that already has a lot of expectations. Now you got the CEO of Disney saying this is going to be one of the most successful movies. Do you think that is too much pressure for this film?
No. I wouldn't say so at all. I think, honestly, I think he's right. I think it will be one of their more successful movies. I mean, it's Deadpool. It's one of those properties where you know what you're getting when you walk in the theater. And I think adding Wolverine, and again, I feel like once we get trailers, actually more like images of Hugh Jackman's Wolverine in this movie, I think it will just add to the hype for this. So I think he's right. I think people are going to come in and, you know, Deadpool draws a crowd and he's going to draw a crowd. And I think with a good Hugh Jackman Wolverine, and I think that's just going to increase the amount of money they make. I think it's probably going to eclipse the first two movies. If Hugh Jackman is good in the movie, I would expect that. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I don't think he's going to be wrong. That will be better than anything that Marvel's done lately. So I think he's correct in stating that. And I think it's probably good for him to project that kind of confidence. Cause I mean, Marvel's hurting right now and they need it. Right. So, I think he's doing the right thing by stating that.
I agree. I think he's right that it will be one of the most successful movies. I think we all have pretty big confidence in this movie doing well. But look, I think the one thing that would concern me a little bit, which is why I don't think he should have said this, is this movie already has a lot of expectations for cameos. And I think that honestly, if there's anything that's probably hurt Marvel more than anything, I think it's been the expectation of cameos and things to push forward the story towards these Fox characters and, you know, characters we haven't seen yet appear in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think it really, really hampered Marvel's Disney Plus kind of rollout, quite frankly, because you started with WandaVision where we thought we were going to get all this stuff, and they even played around with it by bringing in, you know, Evan Peters into the fold. But like, I think we're already expecting the star and the moon when it comes to like what Deadpool and Wolverine is gonna deliver when it comes to like X-Men cameos and Fox cameos and all the other different kinds of cameos potentially. So it's already got a lot of pressure on it. For you now to say that, hey, this is gonna be one of the most successful movies Marvel's had in a long time. Like, I think it will deliver, but like if it somehow doesn't have all these great cameos, I don't want people to feel like, well, the movie was good, but we didn't get to see, you know, Leaf Shriver Sabretooth or something like that. Like, you know, You know, and that's the kind of thing that Marvel fans and Carnival fans who watch these movies will hold against. Excuse me, will hold against Marvel. They shouldn't, and I don't think it would make sense. If the movie's great, it's great. It has freaking Hugh Jackman in it. But like, I do think that is a possibility. That's one reason why I'm not sure if I would have said this if I was him. But Kendall, on the Marvel and audience fatigue thing, he said, do you buy that? Do you buy that basically that Marvel can fix this by simply making better movies? And then him pointing to Oppenheimer as an example of people will come out to see great movies.
Yes, but I think he's almost oversimplifying it and almost stating an obvious. It's kind of like in sports where, you know, there's fan apathy and it's like, well, if we put out a great team, like fans will show up and, you know, we will stop getting booed. It's like, well, all right, but like, how do we do that? You know, how do we get there? Why aren't we winning games? What are we doing to fix this? Not, you know, yeah, not stating the obvious. Now, do I think, again, generally this whole superhero fatigue thing, yes, there's a factor there. I think Marvel can obviously still do well, but I think, and they can still make, Deadpool will still make a lot of money. And then, but I don't think it will necessarily mean that there is no such thing as superhero fatigue, because I think we've seen, and I don't know if fatigue as much as it is, again, the apathy of the quality of movie that we've seen, or apathy towards the quality of movie that we've seen, because if, you know, you've got, you know, I think there's more fatigue for the Ant-Man Quantumanias. There's more fatigue for the Marvels, for the Secret Invasions, for the Thor Love and Thunder, these movies, you know, Eternal, these movies that have come out and just been okay or worse, depending on who you're talking to. Like, I think that people, you know, when you come out with a lot of those movies, that's going to be a lot of the narrative, especially when you're only coming out with 2 or 3 movies a year. And you're talking about your major wins being Guardians, which we talked about. That was great, but that was kind of in its own lane. James Gunn's swan song. And again, you know, just the kind of the final chapter for a good trilogy of movies. And then, you know, Spider-Man No Way Home, which is years ago. And I think that No Way Home, is a lot of it was his, what he's referencing when it comes to Deadpool, you know, at least in his head, is, well, No Way Home did great. So Deadpool is going to be the Fox X-Men No Way Home. Mm-hmm. And there's almost no way that this doesn't do well also. And I think you're right, EJ. I think a big reason No Way Home did well is because they gave the people what they wanted, right? Exactly. There was almost nothing in No Way Home that people were talking about, you know, hoping to see. You know, we even got the moment with you know, Andrew Garfield catching MJ and doing the whole Stacey Gwynn thing and getting choked up. Like, they played all the hits. The only thing we didn't see was Emma Stone and Mary Jane, and we knew we weren't getting, you know, James Franco's Harry Osborn, but like, those are the only three factors and figures that we didn't get that people maybe wanted to see. And otherwise, they played almost every hit, and it worked. And even if the movie had issues, nobody cares, because, again, it gave the people what they wanted. So if this movie does that, Deadpool, then it's almost kind of a no-fail. It's almost a no-fail project in that sense. It's not a no-fail project in general, because there's a chance it doesn't give the people what they want. Doctor Strange didn't give the people what they wanted. Doctor Strange wasn't a bad movie. I mean, I generally, I think it's an okay movie. I think it's good.
Yeah. I really like Doctor Strange.
Yeah, you know, some people love it. You know, but where it lies in the Marvel pantheon of like approval rating is hurt, because it didn't give the people what they wanted or expected. You know, whatever they thought they were getting, which was, you know, for a while felt like it was going to be like Secret Wars, whatever you think Secret Wars is going to be, it hurt the way that movie was perceived. And so, look, I agree with his notion that, yeah, if you build it, they will come. If you make great movies, people will watch them. But that's easier said than done. I mean, we can say, yeah, we make a classic like Oppenheimer. But like, when was the last time Marvel made a movie as good as Oppenheimer? Like, you know, like, and then again, we're banking on Deadpool. Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm glad they are, because that's, again, that seems like it's a great idea. But the Deadpool, even Deadpool in of itself, isn't a movie that we're talking about being great because it's going to be some great story and narrative. I mean, there are people that are worried about that part of the movie and still think it could be good, because of just all the cameos. Like, Oppenheimer isn't widely well received because it has all these cameos and, you know, all these, like, it's got a great cast, but like, it's great movies, you know. And so if Marvel's trying to, if we're talking about Oppenheimer, how about folks on making great movies? Because the last great movie that wasn't, you know, wasn't, you know, marred with all these cameos. Again, Guardians is in there as a possibility. But if you go before Guardians, I mean, shoot, you're going back a long time. I mean, again, now you're talking Endgame and Infinity War. And yep. If we're talking non-Avengers movies, like, shoot, again, are we talking Winter Soldier? Like, I don't know. I mean, it's a long, long time. So that you know, again, Marvel, if you want to bring up Oppenheimer, not to sound like Martin Scorsese here, where you're just like, oh, superhero movies, they're all stupid and this and that. But, you know, that's what, you know, DC had with Joker, for example. Like, that's a great movie, has no cameos. It's just a great story. And people came and it made money, rated R or whatever. And now they're making another one with a much higher budget. That's what I would hope Superman, James Gunn's trying to do with the Superman movie. Even the Batman movie, while yes, it was a Batman movie, I don't think that they were making it trying to, you know, get people to come because, you know, all these other heroes and stuff were in it. That was another movie. While it didn't hit on the whole and the same level as an Oppenheimer, but it was in that same vein of the Nolan Batman trilogy, where it was just a really good contained story. So maybe that's what they have to refocus themselves into. It's just trying to make, like, Eternals would have been perfect for that, but Eternals just, you know, didn't. You know, it was just a tough, hard, it was a hard thing to do with all those characters and the limited time, and yet it's still being 3 hours and all that. But, like, maybe that's the key for them. But yeah, no, I think it's, I understand what he's saying.
Yeah, well, if you ask Iger what the key is, I mean, he says it here and he says it in other quotes from this conference. I mean, he thinks it's cutting down the IP. You know, he says here that, again, they reduced the number of movies and TV shows Marvel was doing. And in another quote, he mentioned how, you know, look, we've quietly been cutting projects, and a lot of them, they actually haven't announced project that they've actually cut. And he says that there's kind of a weight that comes with cutting projects because, you know, there's sunken costs. There are relationships with creatives, their relationships with actors, their relationships with, I assume, agents as well, that can be kind of, you know, screwed up by cutting projects. But to him, I think he feels like that's the answer, because he feels like if you know, he says focus is really important. If you're able to cut some of these things that he says, quote unquote, you don't believe in, and focus on things that you do, you can actually put together better work. Because maybe the problem with Marvel, some of it has just been volume. Because it's not like there we went through that this recent phase, was it Phase 4, where it was all bad movies. There are good movies in there, but and good shows in there. But I wonder if you just take out all of the bad shows that maybe didn't have to be made, or the bad movies that didn't have to be made, would this have been a totally different way we looked at this previous phase? If this, we never had Secret Invasion. We never had the Ant-Man Quantumania. We never had, you know, some of these projects that just clearly didn't work for various reasons. Maybe we say, hey, it was a fine phase and it was good and whatever. You're like, you know, I don't know. But Iger's answer, I think, to a lot of this, he believes, I think, is to simply cut down and focus on what you have. Cut down on the things that don't work, and then amplify the things that are good and with better focus, maybe could be even better, which I don't think is a terrible strategy at all.
Do you think, now, first of all, I will say, and this isn't really, again, this is me stating the obvious, same way Bob Iger was, but clearly the conversations have been had at Marvel at Disney at a very high level about how to kind of steer the ship back in order. You know, Iger has clearly kind of seen, you know, I think they've been a little behind in terms of the messaging, but maybe they've been realizing it in real time. But clearly, you know, like, you know, Shamari, we talked about it a lot. You know, Shamari talked about it a lot with the Marvels and the post-credit scene, you know, all the stuff with Beast. And, like, yep. Like, that felt almost like a mandate from Iger. And, like, you see these comments, and you're like, clearly conversations have been had. And all these movies that we're hearing are reshot and completely different than they were, you know, at the onset. And Daredevil being different, and Captain America, Brave New World being different, and all these other movies and shows being different. Again, it sounds like there's been this reckoning at Marvel. But again, it may be stating the obvious that these conversations, you know, have been had, because they had to have happened. You know, they've lost a lot of money, and Iger is responsible for this, and Feige is responsible for this. But, you know, for a long time, we weren't sure. We were like, are they just going to let Feige, I don't want to say run this into the ground, because I'm not going to say he's incompetent, but, like, are they going to, you know, let Feige kind of put their brand in jeopardy, so to speak, if they don't make any changes. And seems like those changes have been made to some degree. And we'll see whether.
Well, it seems like Feige actually has a boss now. Like, you know, Iger was around, and then he kind of gave the keys off to Feige and then left. And then I think Chapek kind of let Feige do whatever he wanted, and there was no real oversight. And the way Feige's contract is put together, it doesn't really allow for much oversight if the CEO doesn't actually do his job, which I don't want to kill Chapek because I'm sure Chapek had a lot of other busy things he was working on. But like, it seems like Iger definitely has his tentacles directly into what's going on at Marvel. And I think in some ways, we've made the jokes a million times about the Feige Belichick, you know, comparisons. Like, it's similar to the Belichick thing, where it's like the only way that Belichick makes sense as a head coach moving forward is if he's not the general manager anymore. If someone he has to actually answer somebody, and somebody actually gets to cut the checks, and somebody actually gets to check him and tell him where they're going to go in certain directions. Like, because we know as a producer, he's awesome. But this idea that he could just create a whole universe and have no checks, no balances, it just doesn't, we've seen it doesn't work. Because I think he has a lot of ideas that he throws out there, and then Marvel and the apparatus that is Marvel / Disney doesn't have the manpower, which is crazy to say, but it's true just because of how much Kevin was trying to do. They don't have the manpower to do what he was wanting to do on an effective level. So he's lost confidence when it comes to him just, you know, running around just without reproach. So right now he has a boss. And I think that Iger, as annoying as Iger's comments have been, some of this stuff I haven't agreed with at all, but I do appreciate him trying to focus Marvel, because it's clearly they've lost a lot of focus.
Yeah, I mean, they needed, and like you said, EJ, Kevin Feige specifically, and again, this is something that, you know, and I have to be honest, I've been praising Bob Iger consistently for several weeks now. It seems like he's making comments almost every week now, and I just keep giving him praise because I like what he's saying. I like, you know, like, yes, they need to trim the fat. They need to get rid of a lot of these, you know, and look, Echo wasn't terrible, but they need to get rid of the Echoes, and they need to get rid of the, you know, the She-Hulk. Werewolf by Night. Well, I haven't seen that yet, so.
I still haven't seen it, but that's the point.
I heard that's pretty good, but.
I'm sure it is.
I heard it's pretty good, so I got.
The fact that I didn't watch it, and when I do this podcast, it shows you why they wasted money on that thing.
That's right. What I'm saying, Kendall. It's like, why are we, and that's what Iger's saying. That's what he keeps saying. He's been saying it for weeks. He's like, why are we doing this? It's like, no one's asking the questions of like, why? Like, why are we making this? At the beginning of Marvel, it was like, yes, because you're trying to, this is a lead person in the Avengers right now in the comics. So yes, we should make this. This person, now we're making like just this extra stuff. Passion projects. Yeah, these passion projects and these other things like Secret Invasion that are cool, but I have nothing to do with what actually made Secret Invasion popular, or very little to do with that. So it's like they really just need to recenter. They need to cut all this extra stuff and focus on just their main characters and just making those people people that moviegoers will care about and want to see more of. That really needs to be their central focus.
I said it weeks ago, probably months ago at this point. You know, I made the analogy, and it was not an analogy, but I made the point, and it made it mostly facetiously, but it is an interesting thing to consider. You know, while I very much do not like the guy, you know, don't like his politics, don't, you know, agree with the stuff that I've heard about him behind the scenes, but we've seen, you can kind of point to a difference with Marvel Studios before Ike Perlmutter was there, and then when he left. And when Ike Perlmutter left, and Feige was given the reins, we all celebrated. We were like, everything we've heard is this guy's this toxic figure that, you know, is just impossible to work with, has a lot of issues on a race level, on a misogynistic level, this and that. And I'm glad that he's gone. But I think there's been a shift in the quality. And maybe it's not because Ike Perlmutter is this great genius or visionary, but just that there was someone else that had major power as well that they had to answer to, you know, that was on the level with Feige.
Yeah, when there is a when you have any kind of adversary, it pushes mm-hmm. you to be greater in everything you do. So
right.
Ike Perlmutter may have had nothing to do with any good ideas Marvel had. I think that's hard to believe and probably not true. But let's even say that is the case. Let's say that right. was the case. Right. If you are in the office, you have a foil who's constantly undermining you or constantly pushing you to say this isn't working or that won't be a good idea or why won't you do this or you should do it that way. What that makes you do is you have to then up your game. You have to then be like, okay, well, like, I gotta, like, show then to point to Iger why my idea is better and actually strives for you to be much better. If you just have carte blanche, again, and you have no foil in the building and everybody thinks you're the greatest, and you're not getting any challenge from DC because nobody cares what they're doing over there across the street, there's nobody to push you. So, in some ways, it's like Madden.
When Madden lost at ESPN NFL 2K5, there was a slight dip. And then when NCAA football was out of the picture also, it was like, well, we get no pushback now. Like, we're the only football game in town. Internally, externally, we get no pushback, no competition. And they could be lazy with it. But, you know, if there's a college football game being made, now it's like Madden's like, well, we can't run second college football every year. That's what's going to happen if we're out on our A game. And when there's another 2K game, then the company is like, the game from another company, then you're getting heat from the board saying, yo, we got to make sure we squash this other game because we're going to lose a lot of money if we don't. So, like you said, DC is the main, source of pressure, but there's also internal pressure that you face when you, like you said, you have internal competition. But like I said, I'm not certainly not advocating for Ike Perlmutter to be back, but maybe there is room for another, creative or another executive in that mix that is on the level with Kevin Feige that can, because also I think Marvel has to set up some sort of a succession plan, but again, this thing, Shamari was on the should we move on from Feige conversation, post Secret Invasion.
I mean, how do you not have that conversation?
Right. You have to almost had to have had the conversation at that point. It's at such an all time low.
I guarantee you, Iger's had that conversation.
Right. Those conversations that are definitely being had on some level.
Get made phone calls and talk
someone's to someone's asked him that question. Like when those conversations be had, you almost have to then consider like, all right, who are the other people that we look at? And so maybe there is another person you bring in to work with Feige to kind of right the ship a little bit. But yeah, no, I think this is, I thought that was a very interesting part as well.
It's a very interesting story to follow Iger's role in Marvel. Now that he's back as Disney CEO, he definitely isn't someone that seems to be sitting on his hands. I want to shift gears here and talk about a movie that has not been announced. We still don't know if it's actually going to happen, but it somehow got a lot of buzz over the last week, and that's a Sony Spider-Man 4. And no, I'm not talking about a sequel to No Way Home. I'm talking about Spider-Man 4, a sequel to Spider-Man 3 that had Tobey Maguire as the Spider-Man. So could Sony bring back the band all together to do a Spider-Man 4? At least one actor thinks is possible. So Thomas Hayden Church, who played Sandman in Spider-Man 3, spoke to comicbook.com and said he thinks something could eventually be in the works. Church said, quote, "I think Sam's going to do another Spider-Man with Toby." And that's the one that they had an option to do for Spider-Man 4. When there was going to be a Spider-Man 4, they had an option on me to come back. So if it happens, that'll be fantastic. I am getting a little old. So Thomas Hayden Church thinking about himself saying that, hey, look, I would love to get some action here and possibly come back as Sandman. He did make an appearance in No Way Home. I know it was mostly CGI, but it was at least his character. But here he thinks that Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire are actually going to come together and do a Spider-Man 4. I don't know why he would think that, but I mean, he's an actor who's worked with those guys and you think he maybe has some kind of tell or something in the industry to know. So that's at least a start. And it was interesting. They ended up asking Kirsten Dunst about, hey, would you do another superhero movie? She's like, yeah, I got bills to pay. Of course I would do another superhero movie. I got bills to pay. I got rent to pay, which is a really real answer from Kirsten Dunst. So it has people, talking about this Spider-Man 4 stuff. And what's interesting to me about this is, as we saw with the Snyder Cut, and we've seen with other things too, I mean, an internet campaign can spurn really any kind of action. We could see things get created that never would have happened if it wasn't for an internet campaign. And I kind of wonder if I put, like I told you guys, that whole Snyder Cut stuff was all a contrived media campaign, which I was right about. Like, I think that maybe this is the beginnings of that for Spider-Man 4, because this just felt so random and out of nowhere. I'll ask Kendall this. Do you want to see a Spider-Man 4? We'll get to whether or not Sony will either pull the trigger on this, but do you actually want to see a Spider-Man 4 starring Tobey Maguire and directed by Sam Raimi?
Do I want to see a Spider-Man 4? Honestly, I would have to know what the pitch is, which I don't have to say that about every possible potential sequel that could be made. You know, but with Spider-Man 4, I think just given where it's at in the landscape, we already have Tom Holland movies, and we've got all these other superhero movies. Like, now, look, if you're telling me, look, Sony is saying, well, look, we're not going anywhere, we're not selling, giving you back Spider-Man, so you're gonna have to live with our movies. So, would you rather see Madame Web, you know, cross Morbius, you know, 2 or whatever, or would you rather see a Spider-Man 4 movie? I think everyone would stand up unanimously and say they'd rather see Spider-Man 4. So obviously, if we're playing that game, yeah, I'm sure this is great. You know, I'll actually see that movie. I'm like, you know, Madame Web. But did you guys see Sydney Sweeney on SNL? That was funny, where she was like, yeah, you guys probably know me from Euphoria. Definitely don't know me from Madame Web.
pretty great line.
But no, yeah, like the, you know, but in general, do I want to see this? I'd have to know the story, because this is so far from when it first came out that, again, we talked about it last week, and not to go back, rehash another topic, but, you know, if you're telling me that this is introducing Miles Morales, or this is sort of a Spider-Man 4 cross Miles Morales intro movie, origin movie, that could be really good. And I think that had a major place in the landscape of something that people want to see. If it's really just kind of a proper send off for Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker, like, I mean, it's fine. I'm not like, you know, dying to see it, but it makes sense for Sony. I'd say that this feels more like a business decision than it does something that's like actually being like that people really, 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 really want to see.
Interesting. What do you think, Sham? Would you want to see this? And do you think there's any chance that Sony will pull the trigger?
Well, I do think Sony will pull the trigger, because Sony is just like doing whatever at this point, I feel like, with a lot of these movies. So I absolutely think they would pull the trigger. As for do I want to see it or would I see it? I mean, I would definitely see it. Do I want to see it? I mean, I'm leaning more favorably than unfavorably. I don't know if I'd say I'm clamoring for it. But I think to this day, Tobey Maguire was my favorite Spider-Man. So I would absolutely see it. But it's just, it would have to... I understand what Kendall's saying, because Spider-Man 3 wasn't a great movie. So, you know, and I didn't love Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So I don't know. I would hope that it's good. That's probably the best I would say. And I would also want it to be, and I'd want to know if it's going to be like some kind of multiverse thing with like Venom showing up, or like the Tom Hardy Venom, or like are they gonna like merge this with the other like Sony Spider-Verse stuff? That would be kind of a negative in my eyes. I don't know that I would necessarily need that, but do I think they would do it? Yes. Do I want to see it? Probably. I want to see Tobey as Spider-Man again. That I want to see. I like him. He's my favorite Spider-Man to this day. But I don't know. I would just hope that it's a good movie, and that it is worthy of being made and being shown. I mean, the only thing that makes me kind of question this is I don't know how serious he is in terms of like him thinking Thomas Hayden Church now thinking this will be made. Like, cause sometimes people just say stuff.
Yeah.
He was like, oh yeah, yeah. You know, I think it's going to be made. Like, was he just like saying this?
Right. Was he at some convention, you know, taking autographs and somebody asked just him,
talking to like James Franco one day or something. And he was like, hey, you know, I think they might make it. And like, oh, okay. And now he's just like saying it to like, you know, the media. Yeah. Was he like in some kind of meeting, like actual meeting with like Sony or something where they were like talking to him?
Jamari's like, you know, Jamari's got enough PTSD from all the Samuel Jackson trying to will a Mace Windu show or movie by Lucasfilm.
Well,
yeah, no, and that's never happened.
That's been a long time coming. That's like a 20 year, that's like a 20 year request. But yeah, no. So I don't know. So that's just the thing that has me questioning this story.
Yeah, I mean, look, where I want to see it, I would. I mean, I think I would. And I didn't think I'd ever get to that point. But I really think that Spider-Man No Way Home really turned how I feel about Maguire and Garfield moving forward in terms of wanting to see him in other projects again. I was done with those guys. I think everybody was when, you know, Marvel decided that they were going to, or Sony decided they were going to work with Marvel to create a new Spider-Man that was connected to the MCU. And it's not anything against Tom Holland. I want to see Tom Holland play Spider-Man for 3-4 more Spider-Man movies, if you ask me. But I do think that there's just no question. There's a lot of lore and there's a lot to still be explored with both of those characters. I think perhaps the advent of like the MCU and how we've seen characters develop over, you know, now over a decade almost with some of these movies. Like, we've seen Chris Hemsworth, you know, his store for 4 movies and multiple Avengers movies. We saw Chris Evans, Captain America, for 3 Captain America movies and 3 Avenger movies. We've seen Iron Man, again, 3 movies, 3 Avenger movies. Like, we've seen some of these characters have, you know, being 6-7 movies, you know, some of them. Like, there's a lot. Now, we've explored so much with those guys, which is why 2 of the 3 guys' names aren't really a part of Marvel Studios right now anymore. But, like, we feel like we got all the meat on the bone, off the bone for a lot of these characters, where I think, like, even though, like, Tobey Maguire doing 3 Spider-Man movies, I guess technically 4 if you conclude now this last one, and Garfield doing 2 Spider-Man movies and maybe include the last one that's 3, it still feels like there's a lot more. Like, those movies got cut short in terms of, like, the plans for, like, what they were trying to build. And I mean, out of curiosity, I want to see maybe what they would do. Less so with Garfield, just because I just did not like those first 2 movies. So I thought he was excellent in No Way Home. With Maguire, like, yeah, like, I do want to see, like, how did his life develop in his adult years beyond, you know, his early young adult years where him and MJ are still trying to figure it out. And there's so many other characters that they never explored. Like, they were going to bring in Gwen Stacy super late. Like, how is that going to work? You know, was Felicia Hardy going to be a factor at some point? Like, there are so many things that, like, I would love to have seen Spider-Man 3, 4, no, post-Spider-Man 3 explore that we never got to, as terrible as Spider-Man 3 was. And it is truly terrible. Like, that movie, for some reason, actually does get played every now and then, like TNT. So every time sometimes it'll come up, and I'm like, oh man, this movie is god awful. I don't know what they were thinking with this. Like,
the black suit was fire.
The black suit is fire. And I'll tell you what, when I play Spider-Man 2, which I just finally beat, by the way, beat the main story for Spider-Man 2. When I'm in the symbiote mode, sometimes I'll just go to that black suit because, like, that was, of course, when Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man was under the symbiote influence. Like, the black suit's fire, and the promotion for that was killer. I mean, that might be the most disappointing superhero movie of all time when you combine hype and promotion with what we got. Like, yep. I think you could absolutely make a case that is the most disappointing superhero movie. Not the worst. Not the worst. There are plenty that are worse. But, like, we thought that movie was going to, like, change history. Like,
that was like, and it was,
Right, and it was real, and there was a reason to. Like, there was no reason to think it wouldn't. Like,
the second one was awesome.
The second one was insane. And then you're bringing in Venom showing in live action for the first time. You're doing
Topher Grace.
You're doing the most iconic Spider-Man story to that date, and maybe still to this date. I think that there is no more iconic Spider-Man story than the alien symbiote saga. Like, you could argue Gwen Stacy's death. I mean, to me, that's the only thing I think you could argue if you're talking about iconic Spider-Man story. Maybe Kraven's Last Hunt.
I mean, what about, like, Harry being Green Goblin? I mean, that's a pretty, that's like a tentpole.
Yeah, but I don't think that, like, yeah, but I wouldn't put that over any of the other three I just named.
Right. Like, in terms of, like,
like, memorable. Yeah,
like, individuals, like, cool. Stories, comics. Oh,
no, it turns out, like, in, like, terms of, like, iconic storyline in the comics or Spider-Man stories.
All right, that's fair. Yeah.
I would not put it above them. I'm not saying it's not in there. I would not put it above them. To me, those are probably your big three. Kraven's Last Hunt, Alien Symbiote Saga, and Gwen Stacy's death. And some new heads may say put in One More Day. One More Day is extremely controversial, but, like, maybe that would also be in there too. You know, of course, Spider-Man and MJ's marriage being essentially annulled and they forget each other or whatever. But anyway, like, yeah, there was no reason why that movie wasn't going to be the most massive movie ever. And then, man, again, you want to talk about just flaming out so spectacularly. It flamed out so bad that, like, they just didn't do anymore. You know what I'm saying? Which is still crazy because now, as we've seen, it shows you how much times has changed. I mean, we've seen Marvel and DC movies, like, fail. They just do another one and hope to figure out the next one. It's almost like when a team loses, they say, all right, you know, we lost game three, but look, the series is not over. We'll go to game four. We'll just see what happens. Like, that's a lot of what we see in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and what DC has done as well, where movies do well, flop, come back and have a better movie. Like, that just did not happen at that time. You flopped once, you were done. Ask X-Men Last Stand, and again, ask Spider-Man 3. So I would be cool with seeing it, for sure. And I think that maybe I'm being a little contradictory here, because I've been kind of like, I'm cool. I'm totally fine with the Brave and the Bold and having the Batman around, but I have kind of picked some holes in, like, how they're doing it and such. Like, I don't know. I think it could be neat to have, like, your Tobey Maguire, you know, Spider-Man doing this very contained Spider-Man story, which could be like the Batman in this example. And then you have Tom Holland, who is essentially the Brave and the Bold. You know, it's a reverse order in terms of when this coming out, but Tom
Holland is the major trends.
That he's doing stuff with all these different other MCU characters and he's involved with the Avengers. Like, I don't think that there's any harm in that. I actually think if they could pull it off much better than maybe DC could. Because nobody will confuse Tom Holland for Tobey Maguire. Like, everybody will know that Tobey Maguire Spider-Man is totally different. Like, they will have no confusion with that. It's maybe the only superhero example I could think of where they can get away with that. And it's funny, I saw Brandon Davis post an interesting tweet where he actually wondered, I think it might have been a video, but I saw the quote in his tweet, shout out to him from comicbook.com. He kind of wondered, is Sony allowed to make Spider-Man movies? Because, like, they haven't made one that's not involved with Marvel. Like, are they even allowed to do it? And we talked about this Miles Morales thing, and there seems confusion about when that's ever going to happen. I don't know. I never thought about it. Like, but it would make sense from a Marvel standpoint that you would protect your investment by saying that you can't make other Spider-Man movies. Because we're getting all these terrible other Sony movies that don't have Spider-Man characters in it, that are Spider-Man adjacent, and we're wondering why the hell these movies are getting made. Maybe, like, Sony can't make other Spider-Man movies. That was a thought that I thought was interesting, so shout out to him.
Yeah, no. That's an interesting, because that's, like you said, not something that I've heard theorized. We always talk about this idea that Sony has to make Spider-Man adjacent movies, like, every other year to, like, you know, keep the rights from reverting back. But yeah, the idea that they have to make Spider-Man movies in general, yeah, that's interesting. They can't make Spider-Man movies.
I don't know if this is gonna happen. Again, I would have doubts that this is gonna happen, just because it feels like Hayden Church is probably looking out for himself, Thomas Hayden Church. But again, I would be cool with it if they decided to do it. I know we're running out of time here, but I did quickly want to get your thoughts on something I did think was interesting, which is James Gunn saying that he will not be at San Diego Comic-Con this year. San Diego Comic-Con is, of course, always a big event, or at least it should be for DC and Marvel, though we've seen some years where those parties have skipped Comic-Con for various reasons. Gunn says he won't be there, but he has a good reason. He says that he will be shooting Superman, well, which we saw recently. There was the shots of them in Norway where they were shooting their first scenes for the movie. Not the first scenes in the movie, but the first scenes of the movie that they're shooting, which will be Fortress of Solitude scenes. So we know where they're shooting Fortress of Solitude. I mean, it's Norway, so it's icy, snowy. It all seems like it works fine for a place to shoot Fortress of Solitude stuff. But Gunn says that he won't be at Comic-Con, responding to a fan on Threads. Sham, surprised by this? Upset by this? What do you think? And what do you think it means for Comic-Con this year?
I guess a little surprised, though. When I hear his explanation, I'm not too surprised, because I mean, he is on a timeline. So you know, it's while they're shooting. I mean, just stop, go prepare for Comic-Con, do the Comic-Con thing, and then have to go all the way back. I mean, I'm sure he has some kind of process that he follows for when he's making movies, and you know, they have, you know, production schedules and such that he doesn't want to interrupt, I'm sure. So I mean, I guess, you know, when taking that into account, not too surprising. Is it a bummer? Yeah. But I mean, it's possible that other stuff will be there. What he said doesn't seem to, you know, completely destroy the possibility that other DC projects might be there. I mean, he announced so many different things. So you never know. So yeah, it's not great news. Definitely kind of a bummer. But I think we'll probably get something else. So yeah, those are my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a bummer, but then my question becomes, what is the presence at San Diego Comic-Con kind of for DC? Because I don't know if it necessarily means that DC can't do something. I mean, you know, James Gunn has a business partner in this DC venture. He has an equal. Like, Peter Safran is the co-president of DCU. So, in theory, DC Studios. In theory, like, shouldn't he be able to do whatever presentation that needs to be done to show what's happening with DC? I know that James Gunn has been very out in front on almost everything involving future projects for DC, whether it be official events or even just him responding to people on social media or announcing things on social media. But I think it's important for DC to do something. They're going to get hammered by I think they will get hammered by Deadpool and Wolverine being the taking all the oxygen out of the conversation regarding stuff that's happening for superhero movies. If that's the case, I think that would be important for DC to come out and give updates on what they're doing and things like that. Like, I'm not sure if we have time. I don't think they had time at that point to have a trailer out, though. Well, maybe it's not impossible. It's March now. Maybe you could put something together. I'm talking about for Superman. But I think they should have something. I don't know. Do you think that it's possible that they still do something?
I think this is a very interesting conversation. I think James Gunn has to be the guy. He's the face. But it's a very interesting situation because, unlike Kevin Feige, like, Marvel's probably dealt with these similar kind of conflicts, but Kevin Feige isn't a director, so he can go off set and have, you know, something else is filming, that let them film and I'll handle this presentation. And yep. You know, he can say, you know, yeah, so and so is working very hard out in, you know, London on
Marvel, you know, never blah, blah, blah. Marvel never needs a director to announce anything.
No. You know, a lot of times they don't even need actors sometimes. Right. Something shows actively. They can just show footage. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's obviously the one kind of thing that hurts you a little bit with having James Gunn do it, but direct Superman. Now, look, as a consumer, I'll be honest, man. Like, you know, we're not going to be at Comic-Con. So it's like, maybe it's a good thing. Maybe nothing's going to get hit behind closed doors, and I'm actually going to see whatever they're going to announce. But I don't think that they're not going to announce anything this summer. And I think James Gunn has maybe insinuated that as well. But like, I think there's definitely going to be. I mean, we've already seen him. He did a very transparent slate breakdown, a year or two ago. I guess a year ago at this point, breaking down the future of the DCU. I would not be surprised if we got something very similar to that, an update to that, in sometime this summer. And the other question that I ask is, look, James Gunn was at Marvel for a long time. He's got great relationships with the people at Marvel. It would not shock me if he knows what Marvel's got up their sleeve, and he's like, I'm not gonna. No point in trying to go, band for band with what Marvel's got at Comic-Con. It's something we always talk about every year, where it's like, is it even worth the fight if you're DC? And maybe, if you know Marvel's got, we know they got, Deadpool's going to be coming out around that time. We know Fantastic Four is going to get unveiled at that, and they'll probably be shooting, and maybe they have something, up their sleeve there. But, and maybe they announce something X-Men related, Secret Wars. So many things. Black Panther 3.
Trying to say James Gunn might be smoke dodging. Is that what you're telling me?
He might be smoke dodging, man. He might be trying to fight to live another day.
I think X-Men's probably the only thing DC has plenty going on. I mean, he can announce.
And even Secret Wars. I say to myself, Secret Wars. I'm like, I just don't know if there's anything Secret Wars related that is like. I'm so scared if I'm DC.
Marvel's got to win a lot of goodwill back before I would think that Gunn will be ducking and dodging like that.
Unless they had footage to Fantastic Four, and even then, that's obviously risky. But unless they had footage to Fantastic Four that they were releasing outward to the public, that I don't know if there's anything besides an X-Men reveal that would full-on Marvel's X-Men coming in 2027, starring. Daniel Craig is Magneto, people lose their minds. That'll be something you can't beat if you're DC. But otherwise, now what I will say to EJ's point, I think DCU has to be James Gunn. Anything else, like the Batman 2, for example, may have something. They might be shooting as well, but maybe Matt Reeves comes out and they have a panel for that. Yeah. Maybe we get something for Joker, Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix and Lady Gaga. Those are possibilities, I think, where it's I don't need James Gunn to talk about movies he's not making. But particularly for the stuff he is making, I he's the face of it. I mean, you can have Peter Safran up there talking about it, but it just, be look kind of weird, So, it's interesting. But, I don't panic because, again, I'm not going to Comic-Con. I'd be pissed if I was going to Comic-Con. But, because I'm not, and I know the way these things work, while it's cool, I prefer that we get news at Comic-Con because it's an easy thing to sort of mark to know when to expect this stuff. I'm more confident in them and him than I am in Marvel in terms of making the actual announcement. If you told me Marvel was saying, we're skipping it, I'd be very concerned because I'd be like, do we have to wait till D23 before we get something? Do we have to wait till, December before we finally announce something?
For Marvel, this is like, when the people say we're going to play our starters in week 17, it's like, no, they need to play their starters. You need to play the starters. You guys, y'all a little too shaky. Y'all need the reps. Y'all need to go out there and have a good performance.
And for them, it's like, this is like really like the off season. And it's like, all right, what are you adding to your team in the off season? And if you say, give us another 6 months, wait till the trade deadline next year. We still got time to add some pieces. It's like, no, you had plenty of time to announce something. If you're going to wait another 6 months, people are going to have another 6 months of questions and apathy. This is the time for you to make your biggest headway. And we know that they don't do anything else any other time. So, that's my opinion of that is that with DC, I'm not as worried because DC operates where James Gunn will tweet. He'll just tweet out to sleep one day and with a video saying, here's part two of the DCU, whatever, Gods and Monsters, chapter two, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And we'll be like, we'll all eat it up regardless, and we saw what the Fantastic Four drop did, you know, on Twitter, like that was, and that's something that we, you know, I mentioned on the show months ago. I was like, they just put out a tweet announcing the Fantastic Four. I don't need it announced at a panel. Just put out a tweet telling us who the Fantastic Four is, and people will lose their minds. And they did it way better than I expected. I did not expect the graphic and everything like that, but still, yeah, I think that this will be fine if they announce something. That's the caveat I'll throw in there. They can't not announce anything for months, but if they do, which I expect, they'll be fine.
Plenty of funny, fun stuff happening this year. It's not like that we have a million movies, but it just does feel like it's a transition year. And I say that in the best way possible, in that there's a shift in the superhero movie conversation. And I think that there came a time because of what was happening with Marvel and because of this kind of no man's land the DC sat in, that we kind of didn't know what was going on. It feels like we're entering a new era. And this summer, I think, will be kind of, you know, us really jumping into that, whether it be Comic-Con, whether it be Deadpool and Wolverine happening July 26th. And that comes out. It's going to be a fun time for sure. That's going to do it, though, for this edition of New Generation Hero Talk. Thank you guys for listening. Of course, you can catch all of our shows on the New Generation Podcast Network. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn. Also, check us out on YouTube, New Generation Media. Follow us on social media. We'll be on Twitter, New Generation Pod, Instagram, New Generation Podcast. And follow us individually on social media. You can find me on Twitter, EJ_Stewart, Instagram, and TikTok, ActionEJ. Shamari on Snapchat and Instagram, MCSham22. And Kendall on Twitter, NewGenKen. That'll do it for now. For Kendall, for Shamari, I'm EJ. Take it easy, guys. Peace.